is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eta, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politics. The week where power shifted, pressure mounted, and accountability was tested. From questions around leadership inside the opposition to long-awaited accountability in a brutal killing, from the outcomes of elite crime task teams to South Africa's increasingly tense global positioning. Is South Africa shaping events or simply reacting to them? Help us get into this. Botsang Modimoami Mwila, welcome. Let's get into another Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics.
Yes, Brother Fresh, good morning to you and morning to our fellow viewers and followers.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Straight into it. We had a very crazy Wednesday because there was speculation about Wada Steenhuisen, John Steenhuisen.
Oh, yes.
Of the DA, also Minister of Agriculture in the Republic of South Africa, was calling a press conference at 10 a.m.
Yes.
Speculation about him not contesting for the leadership of the DA, amongst other things. And he made it seem like it was, I don't know, I almost feel like he made it seem bigger than what it actually was.
Yeah.
In the bigger scheme of things.
Yes. He created an impression that if there's some big announcement coming, especially when he said, I don't want speculations, and it's a media briefing of national importance. That was the caption he used.
And also, you can't call a media briefing of national importance and then say people must not speculate.
Exactly.
You can't toss a smoke bomb into a room and then say to people, don't run around in a panic.
And look, obviously there'll be speculation, especially when you are holding back.
Yes.
You don't give a clue of what you're going to discuss and all that. There'll be speculations. You are actually letting people speculate. Some people thought he's probably stepping down as the Minister of Agriculture. Some were saying stepping down immediately from the DA and all those things. But you know, I recall when you were at the 9th FM for the news and you said, what's my opinion? It was very difficult also for me to say. And I spoke to somebody very high in the Democratic Alliance that I used to work with. And she's part of the DA in Tshwane. And it's like, we also went to bed not knowing what's going on. So he kept it very tight and close to him and his cycles. His speechwriter and advisor, I just forgot the name of the gentleman who was his campaign manager.
Yes.
Said after that Wednesday briefing, he also caught him by surprise because few weeks before, he was talking on how he's going to stand for the third term. The Democratic Alliance Constitution allows its leaders to can stand for the third term, unlike the ANC and others. So it's they are talking two terms. So about a few weeks back, he was in various interviews. He was in high spirits. He stabilized the DA. He has helped to, you know, rebrand and rebuild the DA. He is going to stand for the third term. How jiki-jiki, in less than 2 weeks, he started singing a different tune. But you know what is my thinking, Fresh? I'm thinking, and I looked at two things that Mr. Steenhuisen did when he was there. He came with a well-prepared and well-orated speech. He speaks very well. He's got that stature of a politician. And he speaks very well. So he read from the...
He speaks well for a guy.
Yeah. No.
No.
Like a politician.
No. I'm just, you know, seeing if it translates the same when you put the shoe in the other foot.
Yeah. Okay. So he read his stick only to a normalist Ian Hazen when he is in a public forum. He's a poetic kind of a speaker. He sometimes sings and shouts slogans, but in this instance was very diplomatic to the point, and he really, really was sticking to what was on that speech. That's one thing. The second thing, I looked at the body language because it was televised live on TV and I had an opportunity because I was home to watch it. The body language was cold. It was not the Johnny Vulike heat that we have known.
Yes.
You understand? And after giving his speech, or having his speech, He just left the stage. Thank you. So there was no engagement with the media. There was no engagement with anybody. He just kissed his wife and he walked off the stage. Now, the person also, here's another element, the spokesperson of the Democratic Alliance who introduced him on stage also never said thank you to the journalists. Can we take question or it's over? Baba. He also walked off the stage. So for me, it was a well choreographed conduct. And I think that it's internal squabbles of the Democratic Alliance where he was giving marching orders. Because there's been quite a number of things that has happened. His fallout, you remember we discussed it with a doctor. Is it Dr. Geoff? Is it a doctor? I don't know why do I call him a doctor. He's a doctor. The one he dismissed. The fallout, I said, he was not a junior person, the DA, he's one of the old school guys. And he started taking out the files that some of us are interested in and what the DA has been doing under John Steenhuisen with money and hunting of lions. We discussed it about a week or two ago.
Yes.
And I think the elders of the DA, and when I say elders, I'm talking about former leaders like Tony Leon and Helen Zille, stood up and say, for the image of the organization and the allegations that Geoff is saying against you.
Dr. Dion George. Yes, sir.
We think you must step aside or step off. Don't contest. You are already contaminated.
You think that back and forth and then the credit card gate hit him.
Yes, and then there's a credit card issue, and which they cleared him of the credit card. But the Democratic Alliance, a few days before this press conference, had announced that he is not cleared on the charge of bringing the organization into disrepute because of the public spat he had with Dr. Dion.
Yes.
So he's still having that hanging. Now, when you look at all those things, these people are going into the elective conference in April. So in less than or in about 2 months, there have been an elective conference. You don't want a current leader to go into that elective conference with clouds hanging over his head. I think that they are dealing with, you know, public perception.
Sure.
And protecting the image of the Democratic Alliance and some of those things. I think they are doing that.
One thing you've got to give the DA, though, is they're very swift when it comes to putting out fires and dealing with issues. They're very swift.
Indeed.
Whether it's just or not is none of our business.
Yeah.
Because we're not cutting members.
Yes, yes.
But they're very swift.
They're very good. And also the way they do it. You know, he's the lead of the DA. Even if you are under pressure from some of the other leaders or a faction that you doesn't support you, they have somebody else in hand, they still allow him to say, you will do this. You will protect the image of the organization.
We'll let you do it on your terms.
On your terms.
But you must do it.
But you must do it.
Yeah.
Unlike if I use the ANC as an example or Inkatha, they will use the SG or the spokesman in Inkatha Freedom Party. They like to use the NWA a lot when there's squabbles in the organization because it's more eloquent to speak to the public. It's more acceptable to the public and the media. But the fact that Mr. Steenhuisen did not give media people in a press or media briefing an opportunity to ask questions.
I think
and seek clarity. Yes. Where does this thing come from? I think that was unfair for media people.
I think it was intentional that we're going to call a presser. We want to waste your time and have you all come in all excited.
Yes.
We're going to talk at you, and then we're going to drop the mic and walk off.
And that's what
it was. Because the minute we have an open floor, you're going to expose the real reason I'm up here, and it's going to start unraveling at the seams, you see. So I think he was probably just protecting himself and the party.
And the organization, yes.
From any unplanned speech that he might have to make, you see. Because it's nice when it's planned.
Yes.
But the minute I ask you questions that are not scripted, then we might start seeing that something's
not right.
Yes. So it makes sense why he ran away.
No, it does.
Which then says, you wasted people's time. You could have just sent out a presser or sent a video. Or posted on Instagram and X.
Yeah. They should have done that on your private, on the organizations, because he was talking as the leader.
Yes.
And also as a politician who has brought the Democratic Alliance to where it is. we should give credit to him. He brought the DA into the national government where they have never been under very difficult circumstances. People may say, no, but they're on the gravy train. It was not. As a political party, it was not easy for them to can decide to join the ANC that they have created an impression for so many years and since their existence that these are very bad, corrupt people. Now you suddenly end in bed. And I'm telling you, the Democratic Alliance is going to lose a number of their old loyal voters for being in the GNU, because some people would prefer them to still be in, what do they call it, to still be in the bed benches.
The
official opposition, because it worked as well.
I'm going to go on a limb and say them being in the GNU will generally work better for them holistically across the spectrum,
yes,
than had they stayed out.
Absolutely.
Because even non-DA people that are now seeing the DA operating, who might not be able to see how they operate in Cape Town, I might be able to have a look at what else they're doing at a ministerial level and say, maybe let me give them a chance. You see, so I think in the bigger scheme of things, the GNU would benefit the DA across the board. Yes, they might lose some of the more often than not probably white diehard supporters.
Yeah.
But I am certain they will still gain more than they lose.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's more benefit. One, there's a very huge financial benefit.
Yes.
Two, Fresh, you are inside. You've got first-hand information. You are a member of the executive authority, because they've got, I think, about five or six executive committee members. So these people are privy to what the cabinet decides.
And if anything,
discuss.
Yes.
Yes. So information is the first benefit they have. Secondly, it's financially. Thirdly, it's performance.
Yes.
They can do what they've been claiming to be doing in the Western Cape, to say, look what we have done in the Western Cape. Me and you, we may have a different story, because their Western Cape does not include the surrounding townships and squatter camps. But they look at the performance of their ministers claiming glory even for old things. Look at basic education. And you see how it's portrayed. The biggest number since 90, biggest percentage pass since 1994. Under who? Under the DA minister. You look at Schreiber, how him and the Border Management Authority have moved, and the improvement since the history of illegal immigrants and the porous borders, as people call them.
In fact, I could hazard saying the BMA have probably been the most effective of most agencies in the country.
Yeah, definitely.
When it comes to, we are working, and you can see the work we're doing. And this is them working understaffed.
Understaffed, under-resourced with finances,
yes,
and they're a new agency. I mean, they are 2 years old. Mm. So, and that's Home Affairs sitting there. Even if the BMA was there before Minister Schreiber took over, then you look at Public Works, the exposés that came out of Public Works, which is the landlord of government, owning hospitals and government buildings, and how contracts were illegally awarded to some criminal syndicates before. They are running with that. And I don't know, I can't remember. Oh, and CNAZN himself, there's been complaints from black farmers to say they're being neglected. And I saw him during the course of the week. Actually, the reason he did this press conference in Durban, it's not only because he was born and brought up in Durban. He started his political career in Devon. You know, I learned very interesting things about him. Do you know that when he became the councillor of the Democratic Alliance, he was the youngest politician in the country at the time, councillor, officially. So in his speech, he was even reciting that the way he felt when he went up the stairs of the Union Building, it's how he felt 30 years ago when he went up the stairs of the municipal chambers in Devon, which is his hometown.
Yes.
So that's why his press conference or media release was in there, but they were also there to go and address the sugarcane farmers and other farmers in KZN who had complained. So he went to basically the stronghold and had meetings with black farmers that were demanding to meet with him. So he played his cards very nicely to say, I'm also going to focus on what is in the country now as a breakout of what you call the mad cow disease. And I'm going to dedicate Is it foot and
mouth? Yeah, foot and mouth.
What's the difference between the two?
The mad cow disease literally affect the... No, but there's a foot and mouth outbreak. And it's unprecedented. Never, I think, in the history of this country have so many provinces had to deal with foot and mouth disease.
Exactly. Yeah. But politically, I think that was a hawkwash statement.
To say, I'm going to focus on foot and mouth. You're a waster. You should be able to chew gum, walk, or tembule all at the same time.
And also, you are not going to resolve this pandemic or a breakout on your own as the minister.
Exactly.
And especially that it's countrywide.
Uber as if he's walking from farm to farm.
Yeah.
So you won't have time.
No, that was a smoke screen. There's more challenges in the DA. There's infighting. And I think they are making way. Anyway, two or three people have already come out in public, including the former leader, Tony Leon, and expressed their preferred candidate. I saw an interview with Tony Leon and said, no, they asked him, whom are you going to root for? He said, look, Steyn Hyson is no longer going to contest. I think the Cape Town mayor.
Jordan Hill Lewis.
Is he the Cape Town mayor?
Yeah, he's the Cape Town mayor.
That he may be the best candidate. You see, that's a very big upliftment. You move from being a mayor because you are a regional leader or chair of the party. You are not even a provincial one because they've got Vine is the provincial leader in the Western Cape. I just forgot his name, and therefore it's a very big promotion for this other person. Mr. Solim Simanga has raised his hand. I think Ntuli is going to come back again to contest, not maybe for the main leadership, maybe deputy. Have a black woman as a deputy of whoever will come in.
Nah, if I was in the DA, because I get it, they like talking about how people must get things on merit. I would still fast track someone like Mbali Nkambi.
Yeah, Mbali, that's the name.
Because she is an incredible mind.
Very, very.
And a black woman at the helm of the DA, and a black woman that can get the job done, would probably do more good for the DA than anyone else, than a Jordan Hill Lewis, than a Chris Pappas. And Chris Pappas obviously has endeared himself to people because Ubuasi Zulu,
yeah.
He's a white Zulu man.
Yes.
And people are... And also because we're easily impressed. We're easily impressed by things that shouldn't impress us.
Yeah.
Including a white person speaking Zulu. You're in Africa. We expect you to speak one of the African languages.
Exactly.
It shouldn't be a novelty that you can speak the language of the people that raised you. But having said that, I think Mbali Ntuli probably knew more for this party.
Well, I it will be very difficult for her to rise to the occasion of being the party leader.
Yes.
Musi was the first and the only black person.
Something.
Deputy party. The DA, if they want to be smart and to know you, be the first party to have a black woman as your deputy. Yes, you have had political parties like the Good Party with Patricia de Lille.
Yes.
Like that, the party NFP, the founder leader was a woman. But in the so-called of viewed as male-dominated, and the DA is the worst, is the white male-dominated leadership.
Mm.
And you put a person there as a compromise candidate, even if, as you say, fast track and push it up as the deputy leader, it can turn things positively for the DA, especially in participating. Now, what I've said also to you, Fresh, was I think once the DA elective conference passes in April, we're going to see changes in the cabinet because I don't think the DA will go and elect leaders, new leaders, who will sit at their headquarters while there are 8 to 9 national government posts. I see them putting the new leaders into those cabinet positions and move the current ones out. And John Steyn Hyson may just as well be giving signals to that or preparing for that. So it's yeah, by May we'll see the changes in the cabinet. And also, it's going to say a lot to their followers towards the local government elections. So if they want to appease, they already have a minister, Kwarube?
Kwarube, yes.
Yeah, of basic education. For me, out of observation, I think South Africans have warmed up to her. Generally,
yeah.
You know, basically parents, I think they've warmed up to her. We even forget, I still say we vote, we support via the color line. Yes. We even forget that she's Democratic Alliance employed minister. But because she's a young black woman, and her department is said to be doing well, the matric results improved, school nutrition and all those things, I think the Democratic Alliance should be taking advantage of that opportunity.
There's an opportunity right here, like I was saying. And unfortunately, a lot of politics is also just optics. It's optics. It's what people see and the perceptions that arise from those optics. And I'm not saying fast-track someone who can't do the job. But you need to be intentional about some of these positionings.
Exactly.
You know, especially if you're trying to win people's hearts and minds. Unfortunately, you know, for a lot of people, the color line will always be political.
It will always be.
You must fix it.
And after the color line, I can tell you, it's also where do people live? People look at it. After the color line, it's also people looking at where I stay. It's a post-suburb or it's a DA-led or IFP-led municipality. Therefore, I'm happy with their services and I'm going to politically align myself with them at local government.
Exactly. Do we move on?
Yes, let's move
on. Let's move on. 15 April 2022, Emmanuel Mbense was brutally murdered. His body was found, Goduduza, at the dam near Nigel. And the full details of his death came to light when the late Marius van der Merwe, witness D, spoke at the Matlanga Commission that he was present when Mbense was tortured in an attempt to obstruct justice. Witness D himself was murdered.
Yes.
And now IPED have released a report about Mbense for NPA to prosecute.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, you know, my disturbance about that is there's only one person. I've been looking for the name Witness D. It's Swart. No, it's not Swart. It's
Marius van der Merwe.
Marius van der Merwe. He's the only person who was present when this gentleman's, what do they call it, the factory, Mbense's factory and vehicle, and they were captured and tortured, okay, especially him. He was one of the security, he was not a police person at the time. He was one of the security company's personnel who were there, who were working hand in hand, in inverted commas, to combat crime in Ekurhuleni Metro.
Yes.
And some of the people who were there were EMP, the Ekurhuleni Metro Police Department, and two SAPS members from a Boksburg unit because it falls under Ekurhuleni. Now, when all this thing happened and there were tortures by EMPD and police that resulted in the death of, according to what a witness he told us at the Matlanga Commission, happened, and he confessed to being instructed to dump the body. And we know what happened. We spoke about this story that he didn't dump it actually into the river. He dumped it in such a way that passerbys the following morning or while or patrollers, they'll be able to see there's a body of a human being, of which half of the body was in the water and half was outside. So you could see that actually his conscience had already kicked in at the time.
Mm.
And he came out to tell the truth. Few weeks after telling the truth, he did not tell us who actually murdered that late gentleman, Emmanuel Mbense, died in whose hands. Mm. He told us that they were taking turns to torture him. So we don't know on whose hands.
So we don't know who the rest of the we.
Who the rest of the we are. Mm. And he was killed just when he was supposed to tell who were the people in the room who took turns to torture him. Now, we don't have any other witness that came out. Possibly the police will now arrest those who are suspected to have been there. However, and they've denied that they took part in torturing or in murdering him. My concern, Fresh, is IPIT, the investigative police, unit.
Yes.
It's duty. It's not that, but they are not there to investigate crime in the country.
Mm.
They are there to investigate complaints and against the police, as well as the conduct and the behavior or criminality that's created by police officers, members of SAPS. Now, this for me was a normal crime that was created not by the police, because we don't know yet. And there were other people who were not the police officers, like him confessing that he dumped the body.
Yes.
So there was supposed to have been a normal docket opened at the South African Police Service when the body was discovered. And an investigation starts that time that led to the police finding out that some of their members were involved.
Yes.
But that does not stop. IPIT investigating the involvement of some of their members does not stop the murder and robbery unit of SAPS and NPA to proceed as a normal inquest of a citizen type. Why did it take so long? If we didn't have the Madlanga Commission, if we didn't have the Mkhwanazi briefing, that family and us as a nation would still be in darkness.
Yes.
About what happened to Mr. Emmanuel Mbenze. We'd have not known. And 2022, in 2026, now the main chief witness has passed on. So I think there was a lapse from South African Police Service as well as the NPA in not pursuing the docket of the late Mr. Mbenze. And only now after these allegations and or confessions, the family then went to seek assistance from AfriForum. You know, this also it now brings, you know, the painful process of what we call the former Orlando Pirates and Bafana Bafana goalkeeper Senzo Meiwa, because it's the same story. The Meiwa family had to go and seek help from AfriForum, and only after AfriForum has gotten into the picture, it resulted in pressure towards the National Prosecuting Authority and the court. But with witnesses dying and other people denying, I see them killing each other to close the evidence. Remember, these are security personnel and policemen. They want to silence each other.
So you think that they're trying to create a dead end?
Yeah,
it's a pun unavoidable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I see this case running for many more months. And unless now that IPIT has issued this, NPA must rush to prosecute immediately before they kill each other or commit suicide. So that the family can find closure to what happened.
Sure.
You see, that's again what I always say. We may say the long arm of the government, the long arm of law enforcement, government and the law doesn't forget, but the pain it causes the those who suffered the loss. And you may end up not having what you call it justice because of the delay.
Absolutely. Can we move on?
Yes, sir.
Let's move on to the Mbenenge case.
Ish, yeah.
Yes. I guess accountability versus containment. What are your thoughts on the findings so far? Because I still fail in the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah. No. And to a number of people who think Justice Mbenenge is off the hook with this, is not yet off. The judicial tribunal that said over the Mbenenge saga reports to the JSC, the Judicial Service Commission. And therefore, the Judicial Service Commission can and or reject the recommendations and the outcome of the tribunal.
Okay. I think also just for context, for people who might not know what the heck we're talking about.
Okay.
Selby Mbenenge is the judge president of the Eastern Cape High Court. And there were allegations of sexual harassment and abuse of power made by a junior court officer, his former secretary.
Yes, the secretary of the judges.
The claims include inappropriate messaging, alleged coercion, and an imbalance of power in the workplace. This follows a complaint, formal complaint, supported by messages and interactions. Mm-hmm. But even those were almost... It's almost like they only showed us what they wanted us to see.
Yes.
In those messages.
Actually, in the report, that report has 169 pages. I thought I'll see some of those WhatsApp text.
Yes.
They did put, it's Justice Mwepe.
Yes.
The retired former judge president of the Gauteng High Court. They even declared that some of the WhatsApp messages exchanged between the secretary and the judge president of the Eastern Cape, they were so explicit that they are not for public consumption.
Mm.
And that's why they had them and looked at them in private.
Okay.
But they were exchanged. Okay, the difficulty with this case is that the charges and the allegations were sexual harassment. That's number one.
Mm.
And however, the findings of this tribunal was that there was no sexual harassment. because there were explicit texts and messages. That's the first reason they gave. That also came from the side of the complainant.
Mm.
And so in responding, and we'll get into what constitutes sexual harassment at a workplace or sexual harassment generally. The second part is that they said she lied under oath several times. And there's a basic principle in law practice that once you lie under oath or in court once, mm-hmm. everything else that you are going to say after
is tainted.
It's tainted, and the court will look at it to say, why should we now trust you? Because we have lied and you have been proven, and because they kept on bringing material evidence. Now, let me tell you what happened there fresh. You see this thing that we learned during the Matanga Commission and the Mkwanazi saga? That we thought when we have deleted and we never saved and we never downloaded messages of WhatsApp application into our laptops or phone or saved it in a cloud, we have been under the impression that it's encrypted, it's safe, and once deleted, nobody can access it. I think this lady in the court files or the tribunal files, she had included material evidence of WhatsApp conversations that would incriminate the judge president and left out those that will incriminate her or show that she was also complacent. That's the mistake they did. Because this one's applied to the tribunal to say, we want to access this. More messages. There's
exactly.
other things that she had sent in response to.
Yeah, because obviously she'll redact or exclude anything that doesn't cover her in glory. And it must be one-sided that Munna Moholo was harassing me.
But what makes you think this old man would not bring what he has? Well, what makes them think?
Exactly.
The other party here, as visors, there's one. And the two, the tribunal came to a conclusion that it's flirtations. They were flirting. Never shalana. And flirting. But it's also a very difficult part to say it's a minor charge or case. It's not a dismissible offense. It's minor. I don't know how do they arrive at putting it at minor.
I don't think it's minor at all, especially when you look at the balance of power and the power dynamics between a judge president
of a province
and a PA.
Yeah, the judge.
And not that I'm defending her or justifying her purging. Is it purging herself? Perjuring herself or whatever, lying under oath.
Yeah.
Not that I'm excusing it, but what if she played along even where she messaged unprovoked?
Yes.
What if she played along because I need the job? So I need to keep this old man happy and there, I'm not going to give it up, but I will string him along so that he thinks there's hope and I can have my job and feed my kids.
Well, I understand the power dynamics at work, you know, as a senior and a subordinate. I mean, the what also bankrupted this case, and I think it's been unfair and sad, is that also the Judicial Service Commission, they did not have a policy
in place yes.
until the current chief Justice Maya, who is a lady, who must now go and review or lead a team that's going to review these recommendations. Until she put into place in August 2025 a policy that is going to be airtight and address issues like sexual harassment at work and insubordination or abuse of power and those things. So you cannot apply that law retrospectively. What we are going to rely on in this instance of Judge Mbenenge's case, you are going to rely on common law and common practice to say, but you are a judge president and that's your secretary. So you had power over her. I do not agree that, and this is my opinion, I do not agree that the charge they found Justice Mbenenge guilty on is minor. I don't agree with that. But we'll have to hear now the commission, it's led by a woman.
Sure.
And we are in a country where power dynamics, patriarchy, GBV, and all those things are very rife.
And abuse of power.
Yes, very rife. We're in a country where those things are rife. And if the highest body of lawmakers in the land, or those who are supposed to be defenders and protectors and custodians of the laws, are downplaying those things, it's going to create a very serious problem. And I'm not taking anywhere this side. I'm simply saying, if you look at the challenges we have in the country, that has to do with sexuality, with power dynamics, with abuse of power, and all those things, especially at a workplace, and you are downplaying what has transpired there. Yes, she's an elderly woman. I mean, she's aged in her 30s when these things happened. She played along according to the evidence that was put before us. But is it okay that if I am a senior person in government and one of my secretaries, I start flirting with her, I'm attracted to her, and she plays along? Is it okay? Are we saying, is it okay? Is it acceptable as a nation? And it's going to be very difficult for the Judicial Service Commission.
You know, I think it's an opportunity also for other companies and departments to have a look at whether they have a policy in place for such situations.
Yes.
I know that the corporates, I don't know if it applies in this country, but I know there was a stage about 6-7 years ago at Google where they had a ask once policy.
Okay.
And the ask once policy is very simple. I like Palesa. I say to Palesa, can we go out or get out? If Palesa says no, it's finished.
So, yeah.
You're not allowed a second approach.
Yes.
Because then it constitutes harassment.
Yes.
And that's why some companies have that ask once policy.
Okay.
And, you know, would a policy like that work in this country? Or would it be too...
Look, I think we've got laws that leads to that, that talks to that.
Mm.
And it, as you say, it must be reduced. Some laws are... you know, they are overseeing an organization. They are leading us, but they are saying to companies or government departments or entities, reduce this law into a policy that's workable in a work environment.
Absolutely,
that is more
crystallize it and turn it into simple language.
Yes. For example, I know basic conditions of employment and many policies of government departments when they speak of sexual harassment or harassment generally at work. It's when it's not the once, like you are explaining the Google. It's when you have persisted.
Yes.
A person said, let me check out for lunch. No, sir, I'm not interested. You come again to say, no, but let's do the lunch or dinner, or let's meet.
Tomorrow is a text. Tomorrow I'm holding your wrist saying,
tomorrow you are holding your wrist. Yes. The law is very clear on that, because the person kept on saying, no, no, no. And
so
you persist.
Isn't that where an ask once policy maybe fits in? That I asked you out once and you said no, I know where I stand now.
You see, I would rather not use that route. Because if we as men...
Then leave it for her to approach you the day she's changed her mind.
Okay, now...
Because now I'm going to be scared to come to work because I know that...
Because you know that Vusa is going to harass
you. Vusa is waiting at the water cooler waiting for me. It becomes awkward. It becomes uncomfortable.
That's
why it's my manager. It's even worse.
It's even worse. That's why I'm saying, instead of pushing it in that narrative, we should pass a hard law or rule.
Yes.
That says, supervisor, you cannot be attracted to your junior.
Hmm.
First, sever the relationship of supervisor junior. First, let's hear that one apart. Let's be on the side.
Okay, so I can only date at my level.
You must have those rules. It must not be
a lot of happy families. A lot of happy families happen between management and floor staff.
But put the rule in, because then you are creating an environment for fairness. I'll tell you two occasions.
Yes,
and one of them involves me. The other one involves Mr. Spooka Kosien Tsoramukopa. Remember when he was the mayor of Tshwane?
Yes.
Actually, his wife is the former secretary.
Yes.
And you remember then the media went on to say he's dating the former secretary, the secretary, and she's pregnant.
My wife was my newsreader.
You see those things. Yeah. And he was like, this is my girlfriend. She's actually pregnant. I'm marrying her.
Yes.
So, and what they did at that time in Tshwane, she was moved away from being the secretary of the then mayor, or the mayor moved. I can't remember which one happened. And you see, then you have created an enabling environment. So if people are in love and they're attracted to gender, there's no abuse. This man never complained. That does the other difference. So the rules are there. Understand? They're, even if they're not crystal, It's subordinate and supervisor. You can't do that. But naturally, human beings, when you propose a person, these days, luckily, women propose men as well. So patriarchy is no longer that rife. You keep on knocking at somebody's door, especially when there is no absolute no, or I give a clue, or I'm not interested. So those are absolute responses. But once you play along, maybe Judge Mbenenga wanted to take the third wife, and this one played along for over a year. And there's no clear-cut policy and crystal rules, what we spoke about.
Yeah, but if you want to take a third wife, then at a customary level, surely you include your wife then.
Yeah, but you must first have a girlfriend, a prospective.
But then, that's declared.
Well, declared.
But you must still declare at home.
At home, yeah.
There's a sister wife who might be joining the compound.
And by the way, with the judgment of the Constitutional Court 2 weeks ago,
yes,
regarding customary marriages, we discussed it here. It's also important to know that when you take the second wife or the third wife with a common law or a religious law, you must have consulted the customary law wife as
number wife number one.
Yes.
No, but my understanding at a cultural level is that the great she elephant must approve,
yes,
of you bringing someone else into the household. And unfortunately, a lot of us bastardize our own culture or hide behind our own culture to justify philandery.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you say, yeah, no, I'm an African man. But our culture was clear, the circumstances under which you take a second or a third wife. Mm-hmm. And often it's not because you've been caught. Now all of a sudden, I'm a polygamist. No, these things are made very clear, even to the great she elephant, that listen, there's a baby elephant that might be joining the family.
Exactly.
And you discuss it and you make agreements.
But this Concord decision on that,
yes,
has said even now that does not end at customary.
Mm.
So if you are married to Miss A as your first spouse and you are only married customarily and it's recognized, if you want to take a second wife religiously and a third wife in a civil union, you must consult the customary wife because it's
always
equal.
Always.
Even on this other marriage.
Yes.
And I think it's a progressive decision of the Concord. But look, Fresh, sexual harassment at the workplace, it's very, very, it's a very serious thing. Mm. Even the allegation itself, the allegation only, it leaves a stigma. I've been charged with sexual harassment. I laugh about it today because of the outcome. And when I was in Brazil, actually,
sure,
but it was informed by other things. But you know what was the sexual harassment part? On Secretary's Day, I've actually put it in the biography. On Secretary's Day, I had planned with my other colleague of another division to take our secretaries out for lunch, like common practice. It's not an official thing. And that did not happen. And because my colleague was about to get cancelled, and then I didn't cancel my secretary, but she declined because later on I got to know that she declined because she learned that the other lady of the other division was not comfortable to go and have lunch with me alone.
Yes.
And years after I get this letter that she's complaining that years before, it was, they didn't even call it sexual harassment. It was an improper conduct.
Okay, so she took it as you tried to sneak a date in.
Exactly, through Secretary's Day.
Ah.
And this comes after when there was a fallout, when a year almost after, when performance dropped and things like that. But that lunch did not happen. Guess what saved me from that whole thing?
Mm.
The policy. Because we had a policy that say, did he talk I love you? Did he touch you? Did he send you text? The answers were no. He spoke about to me that day about it and it ended there.
Mm.
And I raised a defense, a solid defense, that on my birthday, she bought me a tie.
Yes.
I didn't solicit that. She bought me a gift.
Yeah.
And she said, no, they asked, is it normal? Is it not harassment or flattering
or making a beeline?
You understand? He said, no, that's being nice to can buy people gifts. And I said, but that's also being nice to take your secretary out.
Exactly.
Understand that? The fact that
she was very mischievous. Why did she do
that? Yeah, but she was very, no. There was a fallout and there was another case and she was a witness in another case. So they just added and packed in a lot of stuff. But what saved me is that there was a policy, and it was very clear policy.
Okay, so clear policies will make...
It's very important.
There's no ambiguity.
Exactly.
No one can make claims that are unjust.
But, yeah.
But are the policies... Because sometimes it's nuanced how people can be made to feel uneasy, Kospaneng.
Yes.
Because even how a person looks at you or makes you feel like a piece of meat or makes comments about what you're wearing.
Yeah, those kind of behaviors, so, that's what should be managed.
So those little nuances can't always be legislated or put into policy.
Discipline, we also have a responsibility as adults, as human beings, to be disciplined.
Yes.
Understand? I mean, these madalas and people, why about Jola Gospali? Why leave colleagues? I have a rule. I don't date at work.
Yes.
At all. I have that rule. Yeah. And you know what brought that up? South Africa has one of, I don't know if it's still the policy, one of the best foreign service policy regarding relationships when you're a diplomat abroad.
Okay.
I do not know if it's still the same. We found it there from the apartheid time. In the old regime, or when I became a diplomat, we were not allowed to, one, leave the country when you have debts, except your bond. Two, you're not allowed to have a relationship when you are abroad. They can't stop you. And the policy was very crystal clear. For security purposes, the state comes in and says, you are there as a representative of the state. If you want to jolla with Damian in Brazil, Botswana, you must come to us and say, I've identified the woman that I like, they vet that particular person.
So they'll do the background for you.
They'll do the background, and if they are not comfortable, they will say, we are not comfortable with you getting involved with this particular person. They don't say stop. They say, you have a choice. You can go on with your relationship, but you are no longer in the post. Come back home. They give you that opportunity.
And
I think
it's clear.
That was clear and a fair regulation.
So if you're abroad, and you think you like a broad,
like I did,
tell us and we'll do a broad, thorough check of said broad.
Yes. So that was the thing. And they will come and say, no, we're not approving this person.
Yes.
It has happened to me. When I was in Germany, somebody was not approved, I pulled back.
So what do you say to her? Do you say to her at work, they say you're a red flag?
Yeah. That's what I did.
Yup.
But when I was in Germany, the person was not even German. She was from Gambia, working for the United Nations. And actually, I was hit on that to say, you should have supposed to have known. We trained with that people who work for these international organizations are prospective spies.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you get yourself in?
Chances are they're placed today.
But I withdrew very quick. My career came first. So I withdrew very quick.
So after you left, you never went to Gambia? Just for a visit?
No. No, I left in Germany. She's still living there, working for the United Nations. I changed cities. Then I moved from Bonn to Berlin, which saved me.
Yes.
Because the UN office was in Bonn. So we moved our embassy to Berlin. So it cushioned me.
Yeah, watch people now Googling, who from Gambia works for the UN? Each other?
Oh, and guess what? Her ex-husband was the governor of the Reserve Bank of Gambia.
Hey, Banna.
Yeah.
Your
life.
Yeah. Le pressure. Anyway.
Pressure over singing.
Yeah. Let's keep it moving.
Yes, sir.
There's been a fallout.
Where?
Between South Africa and Israel, in as far as representatives are concerned. The Chargé d'Affaires, I think, is what they're called, ne? Of Israel to South Africa was given 72 hours to pack his bags and leave.
Yes.
And there was a massive outcry from mainly pro-Israeli people. And for me, in my mind, I was thinking, why and where would you get the audacity from to tweet negatively about the president of your host country?
Yes.
And then to also interfere in issues of healthcare provision when no other nation would tolerate that.
Yes.
What is it about the boldness and the audacity that people think you should be allowed to get away with it here? But if it were to happen in any other country, you'd be booted out. Ibrahim Rasool didn't even have coffee in the US.
Yeah.
And he was told that you must leave.
Yeah.
Why? Because he appeared on a webinar where he spoke about Trump. He was told to leave. And someone is in this country, tweeting negatively Ka Ramaphosa. I think it was during the G20.
Yes, during the G20.
And it was left. And then now you invite, I think it was Kimankosi Dalindyebo.
King Dalindyebo of our team.
I think he went to Israel, if I'm not mistaken.
They did a return trip. What sparked this?
The return trip where you're in the Eastern Cape, Libizi, now upgrading the Petlele and everything.
Water sanitation.
You can't interfere in the work of your host country and expect to be allowed to get away with it. Come on, guys.
Fresh, it's the cheekiness of the Zionist state of Israel. And
this has nothing to do with Jews. So don't now start with your rubbish about we're being anti-Semitic.
Actually, in future, we have spoken about it a lot. I had a very lengthy discussion with some Pan-Africanist guy this week about we must start teaching our people the difference between the Zionist state that was created by the UK of Israel and the Jewish people who are the practitioners of Judaism.
Yes.
Two separate things.
Absolutely.
Two separate things.
And don't fall for this BS that you're going to be guilt-tripped not to criticize Israel because you're going to be anti-Semitic.
No. That's
and also, you must read up more about Semitism. Palestinians are more Semitic than Zionists.
Exactly.
So let's not get into semantics, guys.
But anyway, going back to these diplomatic relations, there's three things that I would like to talk to you about here.
Yes.
One, let me start home first.
Hmm.
Once you start ignoring your children, opportunists will take advantage of that.
Yes.
Whether you ignore them because you can't afford or it's intentional.
Yes.
Sometimes you are a father who doesn't work and you can't afford. Sugar daddies or neighbors, opportunists, haters will take advantage of the situation and the children. And this is where Israel is doing it. I listened to King Dalindyebo of our team addressing the Israelis. And he said something fresh for me that made me think outside the box, as I always do. He said, this government of ours that has given me a certificate to lead our people being from the royal family has neglected my people. They don't have toilets, they don't have water, they don't have anything. The Israelis have come with a solution and they are helping the people. The people are looking upon me, they're looking at me as the king. Say, king, we don't have water. You are the leader of this Abatembu nation. We want water. We want clinics. We want medicine. Can you do something now? King Dalindyebo said, I knocked at DA, I knocked at EFF, I knocked at ANC, I knocked at government. I didn't get help. I need to take care of my people. That part, we cannot ignore it. It is the truth, and it is what is happening in the Eastern Cape. We always talk about the pit latrines.
Yes.
The how he does it and with who, that's where it becomes a problem.
Okay.
And the way the Israelis conducted themselves in doing it, there's nothing wrong in a foreign mission helping, aiding, and donating to a community of the host nation. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, but you must speak to your host
but
nation
there
first.
Are protocols to be followed. Israel, if they wanted to help Abatembu, they were supposed to involve protocol of DERCO, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, to say, we have a request from this community, or we have seen a loophole where we can help.
And they know this.
Assist us.
And they know this.
They know it. I mean, it's common protocol.
And if you don't know it, you have no business in the diplomatic corps.
Exactly. But the reason Israel became cheeky and ignored this, it's because, as DERCO has said, I listened to Crispin Peary explaining, there was already a third warning. There were three prior warnings to Israel to start behaving. And that's why when our lawmakers or parliament or that committee on international relations made a decision to say, let's expel the Israel ambassador, which is a decision we took last year as a country, they remained with the chargé d'affaires at interim. That's why they didn't have a full ambassador. We also don't have an ambassador in Tel Aviv. Okay? And we'll get to that clarity as well. Now, their charge of affairs continue the conduct of the expelled ambassador, the ambassador who left last year, year before last. He continued with that behavior, insulting the city head of state in a host country. That's a no-go area.
You don't do that.
That's no. Section 9 and 10.
Whether
of
or not
Vienna
you agree with our politics,
you don't do that.
Do that.
And the Vienna Convention that governs protocols and diplomacy, and it's very clear on how you should behave and conduct yourself at the host country. Very clear. So they were wrong. There's no two story about it. The third element is then they retaliate. That's Israel. Because Israel occupies Gaza or Palestine, Our ambassador that they gave also 72 hours and declared persona non grata is not the South African ambassador to Tel Aviv, which is the capital of Israel.
So
the South African ambassador or chargé d'affaires to Ramallah, the capital of Gaza,
so
the occupied Palestine.
So surely, yes, you're the occupying force.
Yes, the occupying force.
Of that territory.
Yes.
But surely you shouldn't have the authority over whether we're allowed in there or not.
Absolutely. And this is where I want to see how Derek is going to handle this. Section 145 of the Vienna Convention makes provision of the occupying or the power authorities, because it's not only Israel that's occupied Palestine. There's many other countries, like the United Kingdom still has land in Argentina, Spain still has land inside France, you understand, things like that. All we needed to do, and we have done it. I can confirm that South Africa, where we opened our mission in Ramallah, they informed the Israelis as the occupying state that they are sending an envoy or a diplomat to go and lead our mission in Ramallah. Okay, they knew about it, and it's the 145 of the Vienna Convention talks only about informing them. They were informed, but they have no authority over a South African representative in there. So they are abusing their powers as the occupying power towards the people of Palestine, and now they have extended it towards South Africa. I still don't know, Fresh, why we as a country, after we have taken Israel to the International Court of Justice, and the International Court of Justice has agreed with us as a country that Israel is committing genocide in Palestine, why do we still keep diplomatic relations with them? Mm-hmm. We have a parliament resolution. We have a court order or a decision. Yes, they are appealing it, but the decision is there. These people are doing horrific things in Palestine, things that are worse than the allegations of Donald Trump to South Africans. They are there. There's records. There's reports. There's a court decision. Why do we still keep them? Why do we still keep Israel office here at all? Why do we still keep relations with them? And some people will say for business, for trade, and for what? Why do you want to trade with somebody who has fundamental human principles that are clashing with yours? Why do you want to keep that kind of a friend? And let me simplify it. If you've got somebody you associate with and he's a murderer and he's a rapist, he rapes and molests children, and you go to court to say, I told him to stop doing this thing. Yes, I knew he was doing it. I told him to stop. It's not right what this person is doing. And the court rules in your favor to say, you did the right thing. Stop. Mm. And he continues. Why do you want to keep that person in your cycles? Mm. For what benefit? Whether you are friends for a long time or what, I don't say we should dump our convicted criminals or leave them and isolate them. But you are talking about people who are not showing remorse, who still go and appeal the court decision to say, but I'm not doing it. I'm not committing genocide. Why do we still have the Israel embassy in service? I would have gone. People are saying, but look, that's harsh. These people are murderers. They kill people. The government of Israel kill people, children, unarmed, bombs, missiles. I would have gone to an extent of not only chasing them out and closing their mouths, to even say we don't want the people of Israel to travel. Anybody who's carrying an Israel passport is not allowed to come to South Africa. I would have gone to that extent to show what I claim. You can't play double standard.
Mm.
You can't say you are a murderer, you commit genocide, but yes, come to my house, we can still have coffee. Because we have arrived at a stage where I personally think it's no longer a diplomatic. You don't have to be diplomatic with a murderer or a person who commits genocide. You can't be diplomatic. And a person doesn't even see wrong in them after evidence has been provided before them. And then they come, and after you, they still insult you in your own house.
Mm.
I mean, President Ramaphosa is a head of state, is the president of a sovereign state. He's still extending an olive branch, a courtesy to say, let us be diplomatic and civil about it. You go ahead and you insult him with an official X or Twitter account of the Embassy of Israel, not the private account of the Chagrin Affairs, the official one. So it means it's the communique.
It's a position.
It's a position that Israel has adopted towards the Republic of South Africa or the President of the Republic of South Africa. And that's not diplomatic. For me, that's not acceptable. Mm. I think South Africa did very well. They've started to demonstrate, you know, a backbone to say there's Vienna conventions, there's rules, and there's domestic laws. You will either stick to that or out of the country.
Does it matter that you're doing this to people that don't care about any convention or any international law?
What matters, Fresh, is that let them do it there, not in your space. Mm. For me, that's what is important. Let them demonstrate respect to us as a nation. If they don't respect international law, if they don't respect the International Court of Justice, of which they are subscribers to, or members, if they don't respect the people of Palestine, let them not come here and disrespect us. So that's where it matters.
And you know, looking at the issue, Yaha Khosi Dalindyebo.
Yes.
And the fact that my people are looking to me for healthcare and water and schools and everything else. You know, my challenge for the longest time has always been to local business people of a lot of these rural communities. Why are you not standing up?
Yes.
And I'm talking every rural community across the land. If I knew that a school in my village had pit latrines and I was doing well as a business person, I'd be ashamed that I'm watching this happen on my watch.
Probably you are doing well as a business person doing business with government.
Also,
for that matter, not just another business.
So now for me, that's actually the bigger discussion we should be having. That one, government will not be able to cover every nook and cranny of the country.
Yes.
But there are successful business people within these communities.
And they grew up in those communities.
Yo, my dude. And for me, that's the sadness of the thing. That we can blame government all we want. But do we ever look in the mirror? Do we ever look in the mirror and ask ourselves, but what role have I played in watching my village deteriorate? Watching the school where I went to school 30 years ago, 40 years ago, still not have running water.
And you can even do it in silence. Go to the king if you're from that village and you're doing well. You don't have to be rich, but you're doing well. Go to the king and say, King, I don't like what happened. What can I help with? You don't have to donate 500 toilets.
That's all.
You can say, I'll give one Jojo tank once a year. One on what? Again, that's why I always talk about something I appreciate that I learned from Buddhism. Goodwill.
Yes.
Goodwill. Do things of goodwill. You don't have to give the church 10% of your income or your profits. Do something of goodwill. The little that you can do when you can. And I think it can take us a long way as a nation. But yeah, thumbs up to the Republic of South Africa, to Derek Wynne, to the presidency for actually standing up against the Zionist government of Israel, the bullies. They can't come and bully us in our own land. Mm. They can't.
Now for me, it's the audacity, the gall to want to do as you please in a country and then play victim when consequences kick in.
Yes.
Consequences you would bear in any other nation. Why would you think you can get away with it here?
Exactly. Last week, there's something that actually, I know Trevor Nkeletso will kill us. Didn't it interest you last week that we discussed the Brown Mokgotsi's security? Remember one of our topics last week? It was on Saturday.
With O'Sullivan and Mokgotsi, yes.
Yeah. Did you see what happened on Monday?
Mm.
The Speaker of Parliament. And I told people, that's because just they watch hashtag politics. The Speaker of Parliament, being guided by the legal advisors of Parliament, wrote a two-page statement with exactly the same way we're discussing it.
Hmm.
To say no, the Speaker said, no, committee, ad hoc committee, calm down.
Hmm.
You can't downplay what this guy is asking for.
Yes.
What if he dies in the transition on our watch? You can't downplay it just because it's a Brown Mokgotsi. I was so impressed when I saw that that media release. You say that is the correct decision.
And also, unfortunately, for a lot of our people in Parliament, it's almost an ego thing also. That because we have summoned you,
yes,
we don't care about anything else. Yes. You will come here. The long and the short is you're going to miss a deadline. Allowing your ego to stand in the way of a solution. And there's two issues here. Either provide the security or allow a person to video in and give that testimony.
Simple.
We need the testimony. That's all we need is the testimony. You have two options.
Yeah.
The third option is your ego speaking.
Yeah.
Park your ego and let's get the job
done. And we have progress.
Let's get the
job
done.
And you know what, friends? The same ad hoc committee. Mm. The same. We just forgot to speak about it. Or I think we did not. The same ad hoc committee, when Vusimusi Ket Matala was at Kosimampuru in Tswane.
They went to him.
They packed their bags. They did a setup in a prison hall to go and Ket said, I'm not coming to Cape Town.
Mm.
I feel unsafe. He's a prisoner. He's in prison.
Mm.
He said, I'm not coming there even as a prisoner. You'll come to me if you want me. What did they do?
Mm. They went to
him.
Mm.
Set up and they interviewed him in prison. Now, why can't they do it to the other party? And that's why I say what you do on the left-hand side, you must do on the right-hand side. Mm. You know, what is good for Ted Matlala and Robert McBride and others, do the same for Brown Lockwoods and others. There's no guilty person here.
Mm.
There's no weaker or stronger person. There's human beings that we as a nation need in front of that committee to come and talk about what did they do or what happened. Mm. And if somebody says, I'm scaring for my life, yeah, but I off-ramped. I just recalled it because one of my guys in Central was saying to me, I watched your show on Saturday, and did you see the letter? And when the person called, I was reading the parliamentary thing. But again, thumbs up to the Speaker of Parliament and to the legal minds in government, in Parliament, to come with a superior thinking than those egoistic ad hoc committee members.
Yeah, for sanity to prevail.
Yeah, for sanity to prevail.
Mm.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
AGOA is back.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Trump.
But just for this year. Why? Because, you know, I have a sense of we're being strung along so that it can be used somehow against us between now and December. Because there's no reason why it could not be extended for another 5 or 10 years.
It's normally 5.
Exactly.
I think the Africans must not get too excited about this, especially South Africans, because this AGOA thing doesn't address that 20% tariff that imposed on us in January.
That was my next question. That what's the point of AGOA if we're also being tariffed up the bump?
And some, remember, there's a list of goods in the AGOA agreement.
That are exempt. Yes.
That are exempted. There's a list over 30 products. Mm. But there are now with these 20% tariffs, some of the things which were exempted on this side of the Africa Growth Opportunity Act are now brought to this 20%. So South Africa is not benefiting anything there. The good thing for other African states, and if it works, is that they are extending this AGOA thing retrospectively. So from September last year up to December. So it expired in September. So we may say October last year, September, up to December 2026 retrospectively. So it gives them 14 months and it's left with about 9 months now. Now, fresh. My fear is, knowing that Mr. Trump, the President of the United States, I must find a better way without insulting Mr. Trump, then I'll be put on the record. He is, you know, the unreliable person. He changes his flip-flopping.
He's a flip-flopper, yes.
Yes.
Even now with the way ICE have been dealing with people in Minneapolis.
Yes.
Earlier this week, he was talking about how the 700 ICE agents must withdraw.
Must withdraw.
And that they must find a gentler approach.
A gentler approach.
To issues of immigration. I wonder who said what.
Now, I'll tell you what is happening. You need AGOA. Look.
Yes.
I think the man is going to change his mind towards AGOA as and when he sees how the world is progressing.
Hmm?
Look at all the decisions that Mr. Trump has taken this week. And before I get back to AGOA in South Africa, there was the first thing China complained about them giving South Korea arms as well as drones. And he decided, let me go and meet Mr. Xi Jinping and we talk. And he says, we're going to talk about agricultural product. He's been nice. Mr. Trump has been nice for the first time this week. Secondly, the peace talks between Ukraine and Russia that are happening somewhere in the Middle East, progressive as they are claiming. He has softened up a little bit towards insulting the European Union and other members of NATO. A week has passed, he has been subtle about Greenland and Iceland. That no, no, we can all go there and do our tourism, all that. Then he comes to Africa, he signs off this thing, and you just mentioned the ICE. You know what I think is happening?
Mm.
Remember that I left with about 10 months to go into the midterm elections.
Mm.
I think the Republicans sat down and they're reflecting on saying, we have rattled the world, we have rattled the country internally. Mm. In order for us not to be humiliated
at the midterms.
Yeah, the midterms. Let us take a step back a little bit. Let us soften up.
Wait, because losing the midterms means some of them are going to go to jail.
Yes,
that's right.
Some may go to jail, the government may change and all that. So I think that is the approach now to say we have demonstrated what we can do. We have hit those that we hit very hard. We have imposed charges on others, but he's softening up.
Mm.
I don't trust that this substance that the USA led by Mr. Trump is going to last long until the meter. I think in between, he will cause skirmishes here and there. He will cause problems in between, but not to an extent of the way he has been doing it. Because this guy was hitting us every day, not only us, the world. Every day we woke up, it's this.
I think he's got dictator Tourette's. Where I'm trying to be a nice person, and then the Tourette's kick in, and then I become a dictator quickly, and then I...
And I think also the Epstein files and many other things that are happening in the US, the jury, the capturing of President Maduro, I think there's a lot he did, and he's got food in his mouth and food on both hands.
Mm.
And some food is on the plate. The best food is on the plate. Mm. He realizes that I grabbed... I left caviar there and salmon. Mm. And I've got Maotwana here and KG is right.
With respect, please respect our Maotwana. our Maotwana is actually a good source of collagen.
Collagen I later
might need for his joints.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Okay, something else, not Maotwana. Now, he's looking at salmon and caviar on the plate.
Mm.
The hands are full. This and the mouth is full. I think they're realizing that we took a lot, we've been aggressive, and now what if other countries may retaliate? He even became soft with Iran, but it's been 1 week. We don't know when he wakes up. Maybe he watched the show last week when I called for Melania, what is it called?
Melania.
Melania to just have a conversation with him. But yeah, those are the developments with President Trump. But maybe the Epstein files, he's realizing that something is coming up and let me clean up myself.
In fact, on Sunday at the Grammys, Trevor Noah made a joke about the fact that Trump wants Greenland. Mm-hmm. And that maybe it's because he misses the Epstein Island because mm-hmm. he needs a place for him and Bill Clinton to go hang out.
Where is the Epstein Island?
Is it not in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere?
Caribbean.
I suspect. I don't know. I was never invited, thank goodness.
Like, good for you, because you will be reading this.
Exactly. And he then tweeted, I think on Monday, about how he's going to sue Trevor Noah. Mm. And I'm told they even had a look at his visa to see if there's a way it can be revoked. But I am hoping he sues Trevor. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Because I get it, he's saying he's never been to the Epstein Island.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you start suing, before it even gets to court, he's going to have to open himself up to discovery. Mm-hmm. Every communication, every email, everything to do with any comms around him, Epstein, the island... He's going to open himself up to that.
Before he even
gets to court.
Will be the nation or the world.
He'll be opening himself up to so much scrutiny.
Can I ask a question?
And on top of that, he'll have to prove that the statement was false and harmful.
Tell me, before we conclude this, did he say he has never been to the island?
He's denying that.
Or I thought he is denying that he participated in... contacts with models and girls and all those things. I thought he only denied that part, but that he has never been to the island.
And in fact, you know what's shocking about the Epstein files is that they've released, 3 million files, including emails.
Yes.
And, you know, there's been a lot of noise about, hey, did Jacob Zuma have dinner with Epstein?
Yeah.
And Sharon Brice-Pease,
Yes, I think it's the SABC.
SABC responded.
In the US, yeah.
I was tweeting about the fact that the time Jay-Z was in the UK in 2010, mm-hmm. Epstein was in prison. And that if the dinner happened to someone else, not with Epstein.
Yeah, if the dinner happened, and some controversies were part of release a statement to say President Zuma was on an official state visit, and yes, he was invited to dinner that he attended, but there were no models or anything else. But I saw a tweet from Mr. Pierce where they put the date. Actually, there's even an email correspondence between Epstein himself and whoever was the dinner organizer when President Zuma was there.
Where Mark Lloyd.
Yes, where Lloyd is asking Epstein to say, oh, by the way, when are you coming to London? You can't come now because you are still under, in inverted commas, parole or restrictions.
Your restrictions, yes.
I think he was under restrictions to say he can't travel out of the United States, he can't attend public funds. So I don't know what... First of all, I didn't know what was the purpose of that media report that was headline news that Zuma was invited for dinner. First, let me tell you, it's common cause and it's normal. We do it in South Africa as well. When there's a state visit, you will sometimes find that one day state visits last 2 to 3 days. One day it will be business people or influential people in a society or a nation.
Or people trying to lobby you for various reasons.
For various reasons, yes. Investment that will say, as business people, let us host the president of Brazil who's visiting South Africa. Mm. It's a business strategic practice. There's nothing wrong with that. We do it even during the G20. Some business and media people arrange lunches and dinners with some of the heads of states or dignitaries that were here. That practice. So if you see me having dinner with somebody discussing business, it should not be, even if they'd invited models or whoever was there, but that's not, I went there for dinner, I had dinner, and I went back to my hotel room or home.
Where my wife was waiting for me.
Exactly. And you know, somebody told me that next time I get married, I must stop seeing my wife, or when I have a girlfriend, I must stop seeing my woman. I must always say my beautiful wife or my beautiful woman. I must always say that.
Why?
It says to me, you must show people we are happy with this person at home. So, Dr. Sipuka, you can see that you don't have a person. Let me leave. I'm going home to my beautiful wife. So I was like, why are you rubbing it on my face that your wife is beautiful? I know she's beautiful. He said, no. When I talk about my wife, I always tell people I'm going home to my beautiful wife. So I've learned something.
Looking at what has come out in the Epstein files, the 3 million we are allowed to see, because we're told they've held back quite a bit. And based on how depraved, disgusting, and shocking the 3 million that are out are, do you believe Epstein unalived himself? Or do you think they had to silence him?
I think they took him out. There was a lot at stake. Heads of state, top business people, some of the richest people on earth, some of intelligence people. I think they killed him. I think they unalived him.
And now for me, what's shocking is with all these allegations from people who say they were victims, they were trafficked, they were children.
Yes.
The FBI did nothing.
Now
for me, that's the biggest shock. And to read some of those emails about what Trump was doing with a 13-year-old child, I think she was 13 at the time,
yes.
And talking about how there were parties in Mar-a-Lago. I think they were called, was it CoverGirl parties or something weird like that? The allegation is that Trump would measure their vaginas with his fingers and rate them.
That's sick, fresh.
There's, you know, allegations of an email communication between, I think, Bill Gates and Epstein, where Bill Gates complains, what are the model that you provided? Gave me an STI or an STD. And he then says to Bill Gates in a response email that he must drag his wife. By giving her treatment without her knowing she's getting treatment for the STI. Those are the kind of communications that were happening back and forth here.
You even read them. I don't have time to read this.
There's communications even talking about what the meat of a toddler tastes like, that it tastes creamy, or it's crazy.
But you know, there's also in some of those emails, people who are in religious leadership,
yes,
and what do you call it, the Vatican has been mentioned and others, but also the Prince of England.
But at least they're dealing with him, because he even denied knowing his accuser.
The accuser, yes.
And
yes.
In the latest tranche of released documents, there's a picture of them together. I think his arm is around it.
Yes, I saw that, as well as the current UK ambassador designated to the US.
Yes.
It has created a problem in Parliament in the UK, because they're asking the Prime Minister, the Epstein files are out there here. Your ambassador designate is just being mentioned all over.
Peter Mandelson.
Yes. You still want to send him to the US. And, but you know what? Why I mentioned the people in religious groupings, as well as the sheikhs and rich people, and now the Prince of England.
Mm.
I want to demonstrate how far this thing goes.
He's been stripped, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, he's been stripped of everything, and he's been told, because of the new emails that are out,
yeah,
he has to vacate that mansion now. Now.
Yeah. Well, look, this kids of Diane and the family and all that royal family has been having internal problems anyway. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, it shows that they took it at what level? You know, it was not only presidents and what. They contaminated everybody. It's like they were breeding and grooming.
Mm.
Even kids of president. I wouldn't be surprised that in future, we will hear or learn that the children of the Trumps and the children of Epstein.
One email.
Them as well.
One email has Trump's son there,
yeah,
and you the see. Daughter.
You see.
So there's another email where they talk about, I think, a 10 or 11-year-old Brazilian girl as sexy. Oh, 10. 10.
That's what I'm saying. They are sick, and you can see that they were indoctrinated to look at a woman or children or other people as sex tools, to look at them as not human enough. And this is the cult. It's a cult. That's the word I wanted to use. They've built this cult, and sadly, it was due to power and money. It was due to power and money. But I want to stop using the word that karma will get to them, the world will turn around. I think thumbs up to countries that are taking action, thumbs up to countries that are coming out and talking openly about this. There's one or two countries in the Scandinavian that stood up and said, we are not going to keep people in our government or leadership positions who are implicated into such inhuman conduct.
You know what the saddest thing is?
Mm-hmm.
Only one person is doing time for all of this. The only woman caught in between all of this,
mm-hmm,
what's her name? Ghislaine Maxwell.
Oh, Ghislaine, yeah.
She's the only one doing time. How is she the only one doing time?
How is she not talking? She must talk. She must say. Then when I kill her anyway, she must talk. I will not, if I have done bad things with people and I end up in jail alone, I will talk. Why should I end up in jail alone when those that were party to this nonsense are enjoying and going on with their lives? We are sitting with the U.S. head of state, who there's actually even some reports are coming out to say those emails and files of Epstein, they are releasing where it implicates President Trump greatly. They are retracting them, or they are deleting them.
The DOJ deleted some of the posts, and I think one or two were put back up because of an outcry. And many are redacted.
Yes, that's the way that I wanted. The redacted
pictures have been blurred out in some of the videos, and nothing's going to happen.
And we are sitting here as the world, and we think we should trust and entrust our health, our lives, our politics, our future to people like this.
There's another email I saw last night. I think I think Bill Gates was emailing. I don't know who he was emailing, where he talks about maybe it's time to simulate a pandemic.
So that they must make sure the world moves away from the focus on the Epstein files, and they move themselves. But look, this thing doesn't surprise me. I'm not really following those stories, except when I find something interesting and political.
At the capital level in this world.
And yeah, no. We are at their mercy.
I think there's two emails where Epstein talks about how he works for the Rothschilds.
Oh, I saw something like that. Yes. You see why countries like China and Russia, they've blocked these people from doing business in their countries.
Hmm.
They know how filthy they are. They know how evil they are.
Yeah,
they don't want to do business. Look at how Bill Gates messed up the world. And I was sitting and thinking, why the world trust Bill Gates with our own health when that man was cruel to his own wife? How do we do? If you are mean and cruel and evil towards your own spouse and partner, the mother of your children, how can next door's people trust you? And these are inhuman people.
I think there's a journalist who asked her about the email.
Melinda Gates, yes.
She's asked about that email, about the STI, and she's, well, why not hush up?
No, but she said, I saw one live interview, she said, now the world knows why I left the evil person I was living with, something along those lines. You know, I may be quoting
the capital about this world. My man, we're out of time.
Yes,
you need to go. Where do we find your social media?
You still find me at botsangm on gmail.com and 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp and at botsangm at social media handles and on 938 FM every Monday morning after 8 o'clock news and Thursday morning after 8 o'clock news.
938 FM if you're in Joburg. Otherwise, you can stream us on 938.co.za.
Yes.
Is where you can find Botsang in context on radio Mondays and Thursdays. We must go home now.
Thank you,
sir. Ichaile, thank you for being a part of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix with Fresh and Botsang, coming to you from Discover TV. Let them be your stage. Incredible spot. Give them a call. You'll be amazed at the kind of work that they can do for you. And the edit time and turnaround is also mind-blowing. They will edit and have you online before you can even say, Hebanna, you're done. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all the work that they do, and the cinematography, and Keleso Modisa King, our executive producer. Most importantly, you for watching, for liking, for subscribing, and for commenting at the bottom and keeping the conversation going. We're out of here. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.